Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. 5 years ago, Dr. Waded Cruzado was appointed president of Montana State University at Bozeman. She was the first woman to hold that position in the university system, the first person born in Puerto Rico to hold that position in the university system. We interviewed her shortly after her appointment. She had ambitious plans. We thought it would be a good time to see how she's doing. President Cruzado, many thanks for joining us again on Home Ground.
Thank you so much, Brian, for having me here.
So how's it going 5 years later?
Much better than I expected or ever dreamed that it was going to be.
Now that's pretty good. Tell us about it.
Well, Montana State University has always been an incredible institution, a wonderful land-grant university in the nation.
Can you tell us again what land-grant universities mean? We may have forgotten.
Absolutely. 5.5 years ago, when I first arrived at Montana State University, I started talking about this incredible piece of congressional legislation, which in 1862 resulted in the Land-Grant Act, also known as the Morrill Act. And what it did, it opened one public university in each state and territory of the Union for the purpose of educating the sons and daughters of the working families of America.
That's an astonishing thing when you think 1862 is in the middle of the Civil War.
Precisely. And rather than being constrained by the circumstances of the time, those legislators decided to envision a better and brighter future for the nation, predicated on the education of the citizenry. I think that is such an inspirational piece of history for all of us. And in the case of Montana State University, what we have been able to accomplish throughout our history is holding that promise true for all Montanans and for the younger generations of Americans.
I'm thinking back when we talked 5 years ago, you used a phrase something close to welcome to your university, something like that. Am I off the mark?
No, you're not off the marks. And for the last 5.5 years, Brian, every time I have to make remarks or talk to people, I always start in the same way. I always say, welcome to your university, Montana State. I think it's a good reminder for all of us that this is a public university and that every citizen should have an opportunity not only to come to Montana State University and receive an education, but also to participate with us in this incredible social experiment that has resulted in a strengthened democracy for all of us.
Well, you just highlighted two very significant issues. Let's break those down, starting with the first. The opportunity to come to a university means at least a couple of things. One, there's room. Two, you can afford it. Let's leave the room off the table for a second. How are costs going over the last 5 years and what students have to pay? In the United States, clearly student debt becomes an issue. Can you discuss all of that?
I think that access, quality, and success are very important projects in the land-grant university in general and in public universities in particular. In the state of Montana, we have been very fortunate. In the last 5 years, we have only raised tuition once. In the last 10 years, only twice. Actually, the state of Montana ranks number one in the nation in terms of being the state that has had the minimal amount of tuition increase in the last decade. That, to me, means that we are being true to our commitment to provide access, quality education to all our citizens.
Do you remember the level of the increase?
The last time that we raised it was 3 years ago, and it was a 5% increase. Prior to that, I want to say it was about 6 years ago, It was a 3% increase for our resident students.
I was not aware of that background. So as we sit here in 2015, what is a resident freshman looking at in terms of tuition fees, annual costs to attend Montana State?
To attend the Montana State University, a resident student and their family are looking about less than $7,000 for tuition and less than $8,000 when you consider tuition and fees. One of the things that we have done in the last 3 years particularly is that we have placed emphasis on what for years the university system has had, which is the flat spot, which means that students will pay for only the first 12 credits of their tuition. So if you enroll in 12 credits, you will pay for 12 credits. But if you enroll in 15 credits, you will pay for 12. If you enroll in 18 credits, you still will pay for 12 credits. However attractive as this was, we noticed that students were not taking advantage of this opportunity. Actually, at Montana State University, 40% of our students were enrolled in 13 credits or less. So we decided to rebrand our efforts, and we titled it Freshman 15. And that is, we encouraged our freshman classes and every student to add additional weight to their academic transcript, in addition to some additional pounds to their waistline when they are become freshmen. But for them to understand that if they came to Montana State and only enrolled in twelve credits their first semester, right there, we knew they were not going to graduate in 4 years because it's a total of 120 credit hours that they need to complete. Well, we decided to rebrand this. More and more students are accepting that challenge of enrolling in at least 15 credits, and the results are incredible. Number one, more students are staying in school. It sounds counterintuitive, but it works. Students that enroll in more credits do better than students that enroll.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's because it provides them with focus, right? They are less distracted. They make better use of their time.
They really have to knuckle down.
Suddenly, academics become the center of their days. Not only we have been able to retain more students with that mechanism, more students are graduating faster. And thirdly, they are really saving a lot of money when they take advantage of the Freshman 15 opportunity.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with President of the Montana State University, Dr. Waded Cruzado. Let's talk about, you mentioned retention. What kind of retention rate are you experiencing, and how has it changed over recent times?
When I arrived at Montana State University, we had a freshman student retention of 70%.
Pretty high.
Pretty high, or it depends on how you want to see it. If this was a business, which is not, and you're losing 30% of your first-time customers, that tells us we need to do a better job. Over time, we have been increasing that to, last year, it was up to 74.2%. So this year we still don't know, but I think that we're going to be a little bit higher.
Secretary of Education Arne Duncan, who was on this show some years ago, recently pointed out we are losing a lot of students that start college and don't finish, end up disappearing from the radar screen, higher, pretty dramatic unemployment, etc. How serious a problem do you think this is, not just for the university system? We're losing about 20 to 25%, some places more, of our high school kids on the way. So we end up with a large group of young people who've dropped out.
Brian, I think that this is a very important and crucial topic for us to discuss. In a way, it signals a certain change of our culture, which we needed to happen. For example, decades ago, when I was a freshman, and this has happened universally to so many people, the way I was welcomed to the university was with the university president saying something like, "Look to your left, look to your right. Those individuals will never graduate." What a way to welcome freshmen, right? But it was the sign of the time, the survival of the fittest. Nowadays, we have a much better understanding that that is not the model that results in greater gains for society. Because those individuals who are not successful, they don't disappear in thin air. They go on with their lives in society with a profound sense of failure. So nowadays, we're moving from what some individuals have called universities as failure factory model to a model in which we still want to have very high standards for our students, very strict academic requirements for them, but we also give them the tools to be successful. And we understand that the function of our success as institution is predicated on the success of our students.
How do you go about raising standards and increasing retention? The implication is you're impacting attitudes, you're impacting motivation, or am I wrong?
I think that's the beauty of the problem for us to have, right? And there is a way in which you can add focus and opportunity and give opportunities to these students. As I mentioned before, just the fact that we have raised the bar and we have asked students to enroll in more credits rather than less mm-hmm. has resulted in better retention rates for us without having to touch course content or pedagogy. Mm-hmm. We have given them the tools to be successful. Let me illustrate this with a very important topic for me, which is math. Math courses are vital, not only for our lives, but in particular for student success. So we had a situation in which 56% of our students were passing our statistics course. Only 56%. 44% were failing.
That's dramatic.
It is dramatic. So we decided to change the way in which we were teaching that class. We created what are called TEAL classrooms, which is Technology Enhanced Active Learning. And what happens in that classroom is very simple, Brian. Now, rather than just having a faculty member jotting down the problem on the blackboard and saying things like, as you can clearly see, and students being left behind, every student has to solve those problems in a team and individually. What we noticed the minute we started this is absolutely dramatic. From a 56% passing rate, we moved up to 86%.
Wow.
A 30% gain, and everything else remained equal. Same faculty member, same textbook, same syllabus. So that's what I mean. You can provide very high academic standards and still give the students the tools to be successful. We are also experiencing the same kind of success in other courses, like in chemistry and biochemistry. When we give our students one more hour of opportunities to solve those problems in a group with a facilitated mediator, their success goes up. So it's just about giving that student an opportunity to focus on the task at hand rather than leaving that student alone.
We have a percentage of kids that I'm told going back many years of asking the question that we can identify are in trouble. Either they have troubled families or they have psychological problems that are organic, whatever. In your position as a top quality professional educator, is this sort of technique of peer interaction, facilitated mediation, that sort of attention a potential tool to help those kids? Because those kids end up on a trajectory that causes all of us problems, them and everybody else.
Absolutely. You know, I subscribe to the notion, Brian, that barring some severe cognitive deficiencies, everybody can be successful in college. If you give me persistence, if you give me your grit, if you mm-hmm. give me some discipline, we can make it happen. Let me go back in history. I mentioned 1862 as the year that gave us the Landgren Act. 1862 also gave us the Homestead Act, very important for us in Montana. Now, put the two phenomena together. Put the two pieces of legislature together. Now you have all these homesteaders, and now you have one college and university in every state and territory of the Union. Not only in those states that were better prepared, right, or more mature. And I need to ask, how many homesteaders do you think were college ready?
Right.
Then we understand that those individuals were undaunted. And it's not about college preparedness. It's more about that individual sense of persistence and how can the institution meet the student at whatever point he or she is. And it results in social gains for all.
Some people say the education system is being asked to solve too many problems, that you're from free breakfast to free lunches to providing this sort of guidance. It's more than the educational system should be asked to do. What do you think about that? It's really a question about the state of our society.
It is. However, I think that we have a choice in front of us. Either we pay at the front end or we pay at the back end, right? Meaning, if we fail to give access to quality education to our citizens, all of us stand to lose. As we said before, those individuals do not dissipate or disappear in thin air. On the contrary, a better educated citizen will give us social gains. It will be a person that will be engaged. It will be a person that will contribute. It will be a person that will be productive member of society and will be a happier individual with a very high sense of esteem and a sense of devotion that needs to pay back to the institution that helped him or her, or pay back to society at large. When people ask me, is higher education a personal or an individual asset or a social asset? I think it's both, right? When you go to college and finish that degree, you and your family and your community will benefit immensely. But society at large will also benefit as well.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking with the president of Montana State University, Dr. Waded Cruzado. Now, your university's growing, I'm told. How much and why?
Montana State University has been growing by leaps and bounds. Actually, in the last 5 years, we have grown by 25%, and we are now the largest university in the state of Montana.
How do you explain that kind of growth?
Well, when I first arrived 5.5 years ago, I noticed in our analysis that there was some unmet potential, that there was some demand that we needed to satisfy, and that we did have the resources to make that happen. I want to make sure that we are very responsible with our social compact. We are accountable to the citizens of Montana. And there were resources that the university could put to better use to open doors of opportunities for more students.
What are you talking about, resources?
I'm thinking about there was additional classroom space. There were, in terms of classroom times, there were opportunities in which we could say we can serve a larger number of students.
Hmm.
Also, and just as we were discussing before, we noticed that, yes, we were attracting students, but we were also losing students, right? Almost
mm-hmm.
like a,
mm-hmm.
a revolving door. So we told ourselves, if we attract more students, but if we do not help those students to persist and graduate, then our job is not done. So now what we have been able to do is that we have been able to, as I say, quote-unquote, stabilize our base. When you see those numbers of students, it's not only that we are attracting more students, it's that we are losing less students. We are, have also seen incredible gains in student enrollment in some of our foundational colleges as a land-grant universities. Great growth in the College of Engineering, in the College of Agriculture.
Hmm.
Also growth in the College of Nursing, in the College of Business, which also is a signal of our time, right? That some mm-hmm. students are sitting down around the kitchen table with their families and talk about their future. So we have been able to reach out to those students and offer Montana State University as the university of choice.
We talked earlier about retention rate, which I take it is freshman enters and is instilled in school when they become a sophomore. In terms of graduation rates, that's a different thing, correct?
Correct.
So what's going on with graduation?
Well, what's going on with graduation is since now we know that more freshmen stay in school, and we measure freshmen. It's a national standard because that's when we know that's the highest danger you will of losing a student is when the student moves from a freshman to a sophomore year. Now we retain more students, and also that means that then more students will be able to graduate. In the case of Montana State University, we have been able to move that percentage from 48% 5 years ago to almost 52% this last year.
Okay, and if you combine that then with 25% increased student body, you're graduating a lot more kids.
That is correct. And society has a need for those professionals.
One of the criticisms of higher education is sort of ivory tower removed from the real world. So as you look at your academic system, your institution, anything really excites you that you see results coming out of some of your schools that are going to make a difference for people?
Absolutely. And that's where our research mission comes into play. And we at MSU are one of 108 universities with very high activity in research. When I look at what's going on in the College of Agriculture, for example, and the new wheat varieties that we have developed, and I know that that's going to have an impact in the world. We're feeding the world right here at Montana State University. Some of the projects that we conducted, the College of Engineering Optics, for example, where we are having all these wonderful spin-off companies in Bozeman in particular, that gives me a reason for hope. But, Brian, in the last couple of years, there's a project that has really caught my attention because I think it goes to address a very specific needs for all Montanans and for the nation as a whole. And that is, last September, the Board of Regents gave us approval to establish a Center for Mental Health Research and Recovery. Why is that important to me? And it's because of this reason. For the last 5.5 years that I have been here, Brian, not a semester has gone by that we have not lost at least one student to suicide.
I didn't know that.
So Montana ranks very high in the nation in the first 3 spots in terms of suicide rates.
I know among young people we're very high, teenage suicides.
We are very high in very young people, in Native American communities as well. So this is an opportunity for us to take our expertise in molecular science, in engineering, in nursing, and devote it, put it to the best use not only of research, but to make that research accessible to the community with some tools that can start ameliorating this situation. So this is when the university is not an ivory tower. This is when the university is working hand in hand with the community, solving the problems that we have.
Looking at the problem of serious mental illness, we have an array of services in our communities. What do you look for in terms of results from this center you're establishing?
Brian, while it's true that we have professionals providing those type of services, it is also true that the problem is growing. It is not diminished. So that's where research comes into play, because we want to ask, what's at the root? What are the causes of this epidemic in Montana and in the nation? See, when you don't have research, you have guessing. You conform to what is the status quo. We want to understand what's going on in our brains at the molecular level. What's going on with our nutrition? What's going on with the social aspects of our interactions? This is a very complex problem that involves science, sociology, nursing, healthcare, and we do have an expertise here that can help us understand the root causes of this terrible situation.
Potentially, as a part of that sort of research, will it look at social factors such as mass media, video games, the sort of stimuli that young people are getting, the sort of messages they get, macro messages?
Absolutely. We intend for this Mental Health Research and Recovery Center to have a comprehensive approach So what are the results of the stimuli that we have, not only in video games? What happens when we have this dependency on our iPhones, on our smartphones? What is that doing to the social fabric of society, to families, when we are, even to couples, when we are together and people are so immersed in their electronics and paying less attention to the social situation? Long term, what's the impact that that's going to have? So it's a very complex problem, but one that I think we need to urgently address.
Looking out your window, I see a new building. This is an era of tight budgets. Where'd you get the money?
What you're seeing here is the Jake Japs College of Business and Entrepreneurship, and it's the result of a very generous gift of $25 million from Jake Japs, who's an alum of 1952. And the most important thing for me with this incredible gift from Jake and another wonderful gift from another alum, Norm S. Bjornson, who gave us $50 million for a new building for the College of Engineering, as impressive as the dollar amounts are, I think for me the most important thing is to accept those gifts with a profound sense of humility. Those individuals did not have to give to Montana State University, but they did it because they believe in the promise for the future. And for me, that's the most important thing. These two individuals, from very humble beginnings, were very successful in life, became leaders in their communities, but never forgot their origins. And they feel that they had a debt of gratitude with Montana State University. They have come, they paid it back so that more generations of Montanans into the future can benefit from higher education.
You've been here 5 years in this kind of job. You put your heart and soul into it. When you look at those 5 years, what do you see and what do you feel?
When I look back to the last 5 years, I have this immense sense of humility, and I ask myself, what have I done to deserve this? What have I done to have the unique opportunity to positively impact the lives of students, faculty, and staff, and to give them an opportunity in life? It's a profoundly humbling job, and that's what I think about, and my heart is filled with gratitude to the people of Montana for giving me an opportunity to serve them. This is your university.
President Wadded Cruzado, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground. And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.